opinions voiced in Investing Simplified with Bo Caldwell are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Price Financial Group, wealth management.
We do Investing Simplified. Welcome into Investing Simplified. Thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, if you miss parts of today's show or any show or want to listen to a replay at any point, you can visit www.pricefg.com where we post each show each and every week. As promised, at the end of last week's show, I've got the Brain Trust back together here with, you know, Kevin Stege of Baker - Colson, not Baker and or Baker and Colson, right? Not Baker, you know, Baker Colson. It's not somebody's name. And Taylor Cattell with Breakwater Law joining me via the magic of the interwebs, right? We've got them via Zoom here today to answer your questions that have been keeping you up at night, something to do with your taxes, with your estate planning, basically anything to do with your financial lives. And, you know, we were talking before the show got started. It's a good segue into if you have questions about your taxes as we get, you know, start ramping up tax season here. We may soon lose the tax animal to hibernation as we have done, you know, as we have done in years past. But Kevin, I was asking, you know, I'd heard, you know, through the grapevine, various other CPA firms, you know, a couple of folks have said, hey, they're thinking this year may be simpler than last year just because there aren't so many legislative changes coming through. There's possibly less stimulus, you know, the different things that the PPP, all the different, you know, acronyms that went into last year, the EIDL. Is that what you're kind of seeing, or what are your thoughts? And well, remember, we're going to hold you to it, right? This is exactly how easy this tax season is going to be.
No problem. I'll go on the record. But first off, I need to clarify, I'm not going into hibernation. I'm actually out of hibernation, and I'm vicious and hungry.
Right. Fair point. My bad.
There we go. But yes, we're, you know, I've heard from various sources, some firms are really worried about what this filing season is going to be like, and others, not so much. As for me, I stand with my friends, which could be on both sides of the fence. I think that there's not a bunch of tax law changes for the 2021 tax year. We kind of know how the economic stimulus payments work and how that's going to work. The IRS is going to be sending you a letter telling you how much you made on the economic stimulus, and did you get your right amount? There's going to be a login where you can go and confirm that. So there's really no excuse not to get it right. Although I do have to say last year, the IRS frequently did not get it right. And there were some notices sent to clients where the IRS was in error. Wow. And actually we heard that across the whole board. So every, you know, they're a little bit underfunded. They're scrapping to do the best they can. Other firms are thinking that it's going to, because of that issue, the advanced child tax credit payments, they didn't really give you any additional money. They just advanced your child tax credit from your prior, based on your prior tax returns. So that all has to be reconciled. Maybe a 6-month loan from the IRS was very important for some families. That's generally what's behind that.
It'll be interesting to see, right? Because like you said, it's similar to the stimulus, right? Which was basically an advance of the tax credit, right? So it's kind of a similar concept.
That's right. Yep. So yep. Very similar. So it's, getting those right. If you don't get them right, yes, it'll delay your refunds. And you'll be corresponding with the IRS. So, you know, we're trying to avoid that best we can, but I, guarantee you there's going to be thousands, if not more, correspondences sent out from the IRS regarding that. And it's just a lot of moving pieces to get right.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, and so, I mean, not to plug you super early in the show today, but I mean, to me, that, again, I feel like every time we have I ask you a question or ask Taylor a question, it sounds to me like, well, that sounds like I need a CPA rather than trying to do it myself, because I know that, you know, if anybody watched any of the NFL playoffs, it's all sponsored by TurboTax Live, you know, so that's on everybody's mind that, hey, TurboTax Live is the way to go. But to me, what I'm hearing is there's a lot of opportunity to screw it up, you know, just right. Because there's a lot of, you know, maybe it's simpler for, you know, for a CPA, but from compared to last year, but the IRC, and for those that don't know, right, that's the Internal Revenue Code. I mean, it's a really, really, really thick book. So there's a lot to know, right? So to me, that means, hey, maybe it makes sense to work with a professional rather than try to do it yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. It does, especially on things that need to be looked out for. You know, we see what the trends are and such. A lot of times we're only as good as the information our client provides to us. So if the IRS does send you this letter 6419, we need to see that and match it up on your tax return. That's for the advanced child tax credit payments. But maybe, and this was frequently the case, maybe you didn't receive what they said you received. And that happened last year. And it's, you know, getting into a war of words with the IRS on that can be difficult. But, you know, you can, especially when you're trying to prove a negative, I didn't get the money. But they were pretty good about finding out that correcting the returns in the right way.
Kevin, I've got a quick question on that too. Maybe this is a silly question, but we've been dealing with a little bit in the estate world this fall, as far as just the practical, how you get information from the IRS. Is information provided only basically by mail? So people actually have to check their physical mailbox if they had gotten something, or is there any kind of electronic notification or other things that they should be on the lookout for as far as what's coming? I mean, my experience so far has been that unless you can actually get on the phone with somebody at the IRS, which is, you know, a unicorn in some ways, you are going to receive something in the mail, and you actually need to be checking your mail and making sure your address is accurate, and you'll be getting all sorts of other stuff by mail from other folks. Is that right? Are there other things that people should be looking for?
Yeah, and actually, this is a real key part to some of the identity theft and scamming and phishing and all those things that go on. Is generally, you will be contacted the first time from the IRS by mail. You will not be getting a phone call directly from the IRS with their first contact regarding an issue. If for some reason you're going through a prolonged process and you're working with an agent and you have exchanged phone numbers, that's a different story, or exchanged emails. And we do that with agents regarding specific issues. We also have a portal that when we are representing a client, we can go in through a side door, if you will, after a bunch of vetting has been done, that we truly have power of attorney, that we're allowed to do this. It's not easy to get that. I mean, they vet our personal backgrounds and then all the documentation from the client to state, hey, we have authority to do this. We can work directly and request information via email or PDFs, and it'll come to us. But that's a different thing. Generally, it's going to be good old USPS giving you the nasty gram, if you will, when the IRS letters show up.
So check your mail, check your mail.
And they're not calling you, right? The IRS is not calling you. That's a big key, right? And I know I'm sort of saying it tongue in cheek, but the IRS will not call you. They don't have somebody, you know, the cops aren't on their way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that, because that's a common thing that I know a lot of folks have fallen prey to, sadly, because it's a scary phone call to get to say, hey, this is the IRS. We have, you know, you're back on your taxes, or your Social Security is being seized, you know, those sort of things. It's never, no bueno.
Yeah.
And same with the Oregon Department of Revenue and Washington Department of Revenue. Is that right? Oregon and Washington are also following suit on U.S. mail. And
yeah. And I'm not going to say exclusively, Which it would be nice to be able to say that, but they, and it's a big word generally, I mean, you're going to know if they're contacting you what the issue is by phone. You're not going to have just a surprise phone call unless it's criminal investigation and, you know, they're flagging you for fraud or something. If you're committing fraud, you're kind of expecting that anyway because you're not sleeping well. And if you're not committing fraud, you'll just go to your attorney right away, your tax attorney or your criminal attorney, and start addressing that. But I have not seen that with any of my clients or any places I've worked before. Unless you're being, what's that show? A Punked by Ashton Kutcher.
Oh yeah. Is that show still on?
I don't think so, but he did Justin Timberlake one time with an IRS seizure of his stuff. And they had a van out there and they were hauling all of his stuff out when he came home. And actually, my esteem for Justin Timberlake went up watching him respond to that, thinking it was real. I would not have been as composed or as kind as he was.
There would have been some choice words that wouldn't have been allowed on network television, is what you're saying, if it was happening.
That's right. They even had a replica of one of his classic guitars made up, and they broke it in front of him, this replica. He was thinking it was his real, like, priceless guitar being broken. Yeah. So Ashton Kutcher pulled out the stops on that one. Oof.
Anyway, so the gist is, don't, you know, check your mail, right? Make sure if Ashton Kutcher shows up at your house, it's probably not real. You know, it's probably not your vintage guitar that he is breaking. Information
don't
for life.
That's my dream, so.
A white box truck with IRS on the side is a tip off.
That's pretty funny. But so, you know, so are there other things that people should maybe be looking out for, keeping, you know, so you mentioned the child tax credit, right? So if you got that advance payment of the credit, that's going to have to be reconciled. There's, you know, the stimulus payments and different things. I've heard that, state, there's issues because we are in a high tax state. Well, if you're in Oregon, right, we're in a high, although I would assume Washington is a relatively high for property tax, right? But so if we're in a high tax state like Oregon, where we have high state income tax, relatively high, and we have, you know, relatively high property tax, right? So I have heard that there's noise about the SALT deduction that, you know, that are going on. Can you speak a little bit about that, or would it be good to take a break and then talk about it? You got, let's do that. So we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll talk a little bit about that, the SALT, or that stands for state and local tax, right? I get it.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. As a reminder, if you have a question you'd like to get answered on our show, send it to ask Bo, ASKBO at pricefg.com, or visit www.pricefg.com. And if you need to get a hold of Taylor, you can call
503-878-8948 with Breakwater Law.
Perfect. And if you need to get a hold of Kevin in the meantime, you can call 503-666. I don't remember the rest.
5569.
It's 503-666-5569. One of these days I'm going to write this down and I'm going to have it down. So maybe I'll do that in the break, but we'll take a quick break here. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thanks for tuning in as part of your day. If you missed the opening segment here today, you missed the rest of the show, you can always catch a replay by visiting www.pricefg.com. And if you'd like to schedule a complimentary consultation with a member of our team here at Price Financial, please give us a call at 503-253-3000. We'd be happy to sit down and talk with you about all things financial. Of course, if it bleeds into the areas where I'm not the expert, where I don't have the expertise, that's when I bring in the brain trust. And still with me today is Kevin Stege of Baker & Colson and Taylor Cattell with Breakwater Law. They're joining me again via the magic of the internet. So bear with us, as you know, I am the worst millennial alive in terms of technology. So if we have technological hiccups, we can certainly blame me. But Kevin, I kind of slowed your roll there, as before we went into break, as we were talking a little bit about the SALT deduction or the state and local tax deduction, because I know that was a big issue for people here in Oregon, particularly small business owners here in Oregon dealing as a high tax state. And with the different tax cuts and the different, movements with the standard deductions and things, it sort of cut into some people's deductions. But I hear there is possibly some good news on the horizon with the way that what you've seen, at least so far this year.
That's right. And for a little background, basically several years back, Trump passed his tax law changes and it put a cap on your itemized deductions for state and local tax deductions, which is going to be your state income tax and your real estate taxes generally. And so for example, say you have two identical taxpayers, each making $100,000, one in the state of Washington and one in the state of Oregon. And the Washington person, they pay their federal tax on $100,000. We won't factor in some of their deductions and stuff. We'll say that's their taxable income. The Oregon person would get to deduct from their federal return whatever state taxes they paid. So maybe instead of $100,000, they're only paying tax on $90,000, while the Washington resident is paying on $100,000. So at the federal level, they really don't care what you're paying to your states. If you just across the board, the Washington person would be paying more federal income tax than the Oregon, but they have the exact same income. So to still allow people some deduction, they put a cap, a maximum $10,000 on the SALT tax part of your itemized deductions. And so that for a lot of high income tax states, that was a tax raise, but basically that just got them on par with what all the other states were paying. Now, yeah, there's all the political purposes and stuff, and we won't go into any of that. This is just the workings of it. But those states that had their taxes raised, they have passed a workaround is what they're calling it. And basically how it works, and unfortunately it's not going to apply to as many people as you think, but our pass-through business listeners or clients should take note. There's some important things to consider, and it is still being ironed out as we speak how it's actually going to work. But generally what's going to happen is, say you have a corporation and it passes out the income to the shareholder to put on the shareholder's individual return each year. And then the shareholder, say they make $100,000, they're limited on how much Oregon tax they can deduct at the individual level. But Oregon made a pass around and said, well, if that corporation pays the tax at the corporate level, it's a deduction on the corporate tax return, because on the federal returns, there's no SALT limitation. There's no SALT cap put on the corporations or the partnerships, the businesses. So basically, they're allowing that deduction to happen at the business level. Business income is run down by the amount of state tax. That lower amount gets passed out to the taxpayer to put on their tax return. And that's generally how it's going to work. Well, now you start trying to figure out, well, what about a tax, all this taxpayers other Oregon income tax? Well, maybe they can pay more taxes, or how to do the tax planning around that. Do we want to run income down like we tend to do for businesses mm-hmm. with purchases of equipment and stuff at the end of the year? Well, that's not going to be as beneficial now if now you have no business income for the year simply from a big purchase, and therefore no state tax deduction. Anyway, you can kind of see how it works. It's still being ironed out how it's going to look, but there is elections, elections that need to be made at the S corp or the partnership level this year when you file your tax return, most likely. So that's where we're at on that. But it's significant. If you fit the right circumstances, it can be a significant tax deduction. Yeah. And you don't want to miss out on how that's going to work. So definitely in this case, you've got to be working with a CPA who's following how all these things work.
Yeah, I can, that's, those are potentially big numbers for S corps or, what you could call any pass through entity. Right. So is that only on the corporate level, or is that for like single member LLCs potentially, or is that you'd have to be an S corp? You have to be incorporated.
It appears that it needs to be a separate entity that would be subject to paying its own taxes. And it appears that Oregon passed their change. The workaround is saying that they will, if a shareholder or a partner wants all of them elect, they can be taxed at the entity level. I don't at this point see that a single member LLC is part of that, but we'll see. They'll iron all those things out.
Okay. Well, I mean, what I'm hearing is work with the CPA, right? That's following those items, right? I mean, that's the biggest part of that, because that could potentially be tens of thousands of dollars in deductions that you're not getting, right, if you're not doing it right.
Yeah, that's right. And each year at the first week of January, the state of Oregon, Multnomah County, the state of Washington, and California all get together, and they bring some pretty top-level folks to come and talk about state and local taxes on a webinar. And it's usually heavily attended by a lot of CPAs, and really good information helps us all get on the same page. This year they got to that point, which was part of the agenda. And a lot of, while it was generally talked about, a lot of it was still TBD. And, they got to figure out how it's going to look and make a lot of rules around it. Cause I mean, what if you had a CEO of a large, corporation that's making, say, $3 million, and he's got this little flow through, and instead somehow they're able to funnel some of his income through his flow through little side, what do they call them? Side hustles.
Yeah.
His side hustle, and then that, or his or her side hustle, and then they pay the tax through there. Now you're just taking basically an employee and running a big chunk of their tax through, but it's going to open the door to hijinks and shenanigans, I think. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Sure.
Well, Kevin, this brings up a question for me that I get a lot in the estate planning realm, but I wonder if it is even more applicable to what you're saying. And it's certainly where my mind goes, which is there any such thing as a simple tax return anymore? Does that even exist? Because I know that there's higher standardized deductions, so that might be, than there have been in the past. So that might be a way to simplify it for some folks. But what's your take on that? Are there truly appropriate simple things? I mean, business, obviously, anytime you're involved in business, throws a little wrench in things. But what's your experience? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say yes. I would say there is a simple tax return, but to define that, I would say that's somebody who has already vetted out many of their own issues and have done their planning and are in the midst of that planning, and things are going forward, and there haven't been significant tax law changes. So there's a lot of what ifs in there. Mm-hmm. And if you're making a W-2, you're taking the standard deduction, you're deferring into your 401k, you're single, no kids, You know, absolutely. I would say, I mean, that's an easy one to do on TurboTax or H&R Block Online. Or even if the income's low enough, IRS has free file through their website for incomes under 50 grand, I think. So that's a good way to go. But boy, oh boy, if you're coming up onto a major transaction or a major life change, and that's going to be, you know, going to college, funding college, planning your first job, planning your first home purchase, retiring, getting married, planning for, you know, funding your kids' education. A lot of those things need somebody to look at. A lot of that's going to be Bo. Some of that will be from a tax perspective on my side. Clearly, the estate planning side of things, once assets start accumulating, all of those things, especially if you have a business or a rental, you need somebody who knows those laws and are staying up. I won't even say that a simple one can, well, there could be a simple one, but so anyway, there's
sounds like it doesn't take much to get over that threshold. Even just marriage or kids could be enough to put you over into this is worth checking in with somebody who knows what's going on.
That's right. They can do the work. They can do the forward-looking planning. And once you're back on track and everything's similar and somebody's taking a look, then you can go back to doing it yourself when it's just a matter of data entry.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. You want to make sure you're just, to me, what I've heard so far today, right, from the standpoint of, it reminds me of the thing that Taylor says a lot, right, when talking about whether to use a, you know, use a professional or work with one of those online companies, is that, you know, you can save yourself money now, but possibly cost yourself a lot of money in the future, right? When we talk about estate planning and planning for those pieces that come at end of life. But from a tax perspective, not flipped is not the right term, but you could save money now, but you're missing out on potentially a lot more savings later, is sort of the way that I look at that, right? Is, hey, look, here's the deductions, here's the different, because everybody thinks of taxes and saving money on taxes as, you know, maybe we're cheating the system or, you know, you're doing something funky. No, it's just you don't know about the different ins and outs of how that works if you don't work with somebody, right? So to me, I think what you just said is brilliant. At least having a check-in with a professional that takes a look at your last couple of years. Here's the things we're doing. Let's do some planning. Invest a little bit of money now in that. And then forward-looking, like you said, if it's simple, they'll tell you that. But even situations where you don't have to file a tax return because maybe you're just taking Social Security and that's it, you know, that there can be pieces in there that you might be missing, right? Planning state things you can do from a planning perspective, forward looking at least.
That's exactly right. And you know, when you have a business or a rental, attorney fees, accounting fees are all legitimate business deductions. So the cost just goes down about a third usually or more of your attorney or accountant in tax savings.
Right. No, it absolutely. That makes complete sense to me. So I think that's a good spot to take another break here, you know, let people stretch their legs a little bit. But if you want to listen to different parts of the show that have happened so far, as again, we do replay the show, www.pricefg.com, or you can also download the podcast via the Apple Podcast. And I'm going to have Kevin, you go first this time. So if they want to get a hold of Baker and Colson, how do they get a hold of you? 503-555, right? That's the old 555, you know, but no, how do they get a hold of you?
That's right. 503-666-5569. And we're on the web at baker-colson.com.
Perfect. And Taylor, if folks are having questions about, you know, anything and everything to do with their estate planning, how do they get a hold of Breakwater Law?
You can look us up on the web, breakwater-law.com, or you can call us, 503-878-8948.
Perfect. And as always, if you'd like to get a hold of us and our team at Price Financial, it's 503-253-3000. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
When planning for income and retirement, there's a lot to consider. Between managing the budget that fits the family, trying to figure out from where to draw your income, or balancing the tax ramifications of withdrawals, moving into retirement can be overwhelming. At Price Financial Group, we help clients work to create a sustainable retirement roadmap, addressing these concerns and more, and helping folks feel confident in their future retirement income, right when they need it most. If you'd like a financial plan tailored just for you, please don't hesitate and call our office today at 503-253-3000 or text REVIEW to 484848 to set up your complimentary consultation. Price Financial Group offers investment advisory services through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thanks for tuning in for at least part of our show. As a reminder, if you miss pieces or would like to listen to a replay of our show, visit www.pricefg.com. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, President and CEO of Price Financial Group, here in studio with the Brain Trust, back together, Kevin Stege of Baker & Colson CPAs and Taylor Cattell of Breakwater Law, joining me via the magic of the interwebs. And we've been answering some questions, going over some things, but if you've got something that's been bugging you, something that you'd really like answered on a future show that you can have, you know, especially when I have these two back in together, make sure to send that to askbo@pricefg.com. So, you know, we got some questions. We got some things that are coming up. Kevin, I know you had a question for Taylor that's been bugging you.
That's right. Working with some clients and heading toward tax plan, estate planning. Generally, it comes up, and this is usually when I refer them to you, is when does it make sense in my estate plan to consider a trust or a living trust or an irrevocable trust, the various types, and what are the times that are like, okay, this is why I need it. You know, generally I kind of know from my small perspective what the estate tax savings would be if we go that route or not, but from you know, your planning, when you do a lot of complex planning, when does a trust make sense?
That's a great question, and I get it all the time. And the most difficult thing for me is that it really changes from situation to situation. And I am a very pragmatic planner. So that's part of just who I am. What I bring to the table is what makes sense for your situation, both from your family structure and your asset structure and the value of your assets and your desires and your priorities. And are you going to move out of Oregon or what, you know, do you not know that question? Are you 85 years old and here to stay for sure? Are you 35 and just had your first kid or your second or your third or your fifth or whatever? Every situation is so unique that it can be hard for me as a planner to say something that is more black and white. I wish I could just say, this is what you need. And that would make my job a lot easier too. But, and some attorneys, I don't say that it makes their job a lot easier, but some attorneys do take a position that is very clear. Everybody needs a trust. That is usually very few attorneys take the position that everybody needs a will, but there are a number of good attorneys who I just, you know, we agree to disagree that everybody needs a trust. And I want to first explain that there are hundreds of types, if not thousands, if not more than that, types of trusts out there. And I would be very hesitant if I'm a listener or a general person out there to do anything that I can't change, right? An irrevocable trust of any kind is not something to take lightly, meaning make sure you hold the power, right? That's an important piece. There are times where certain types of irrevocable trust that you cannot change, are appropriate. But given the tax laws right now, that's not very common. You know, for most people, most folks are not going to be looking at irrevocable decisions. And there's always a cost besides the attorney fee cost. There's always a loss of power and control, which most people don't like. So I just put on a shelf anything irrevocable. And the question that's the more common question is revocable living trust versus, you know, relatively simple will. When is the difference? And one of the pieces of information that I think is most important for your kind of average person, not somebody who's a lawyer, who's even in this very professional sphere, but just an average person would be knowing that the tax planning that you can do as part of your estate plan, protecting assets for kids that you can do as part of an estate plan, some of the most common questions we get are the exact same between a will and a trust. The exact same. So you're not going to save on a bunch of taxes because you have a revocable trust. You might save on some costs when you pass, but all of that is about the process. You know, where the content of your plan, what I like to say is the content of your plan is the same no matter what. It's a process. How does your stuff go from you to the person you want it to go to? And how do we do that in the most efficient way possible? So when we're talking about, well, what's the process, it's going to also depend on, well, what state do you live in? What county do you live in? What's going on at the county level right now? At this exact moment, are the judges being nitpicky? Is the probate commissioner new, right? Did they change the local pieces? How are they enforcing it? The law is the same across the state of Oregon. But how it actually works, right? What's getting kicked back to me from the judge's desk or from the probate commissioner, if that county has a probate commissioner, can vary. It feels almost like day by day, but there are general trends for some counties that are harder to work with and some counties that are more helpful. So, but there's so many different factors to consider that that's a big part of why you would have an attorney to work through these questions. And I usually look at it and say, is avoiding probate, meaning keeping your administration after your death out of the court's hands with the certain default rules that come as part of the probate process, is that worth it, right? Is it gonna pay off? Because setting up a revocable living trust is a lot more work now. So it's only worth work now if you're gonna get some benefit later. And if you're setting up a revocable living trust, but to avoid, say, probate for your real estate, but then fast forward and you don't actually intend to own any real estate, all right, there's a lot of folks who are moving into, say, 55 plus communities, or where you have a deposit down, where you've got some kind of condo situation, but a reversionary interest, right? It goes back to the Mirabellas, the, you know, whatever your, wherever you decide the living situation you have, you may not have any real property at all, right? And you may be passing things by beneficiary designation. You may be passing things by other vehicles in your asset profile. So there's a lot to look at as far as, is this going to make the difference? I wish in many ways, I'm glad in others, that we don't know when we're going to die, right? We don't know what we're going to have when we die. And so anytime that we're doing estate planning, we're making educated projections and guesses. And the closer we get to knowing that something's going to happen, the more accurate we can be in protecting against whatever you don't want. So when I'm planning for my 80 somethings, my 90 somethings, we have more information about what you're likely to die with than when I'm planning with my 40s, 30s, 50 somethings. Mm-hmm. And we just don't know exactly how things are going to shake out. So it's a really good question. It's a really interesting question. I can't give a black and white answer, much as I really wish I could. It's not about how much you have. Okay, that's another really big misunderstanding. Well, I don't have anything, so it's not worth it. You could be in total debt and a trust is going to make a huge benefit, right? Everything you have could be underwater, or the IRS could be after you, and we could do some really good planning to try to help your family with certain aspects of that. But it's not necessarily, you could also have millions and millions of dollars, but a trust is not appropriate because they're all in stockpiled retirement accounts, mm-hmm. right? And they're going to pass by beneficiary designation anyway, or high life insurance policies, or something that your trust won't necessarily own. It's still important to plan. It's still really, there's a lot we can still do to work with it, but it's not really that simple question of a will versus a trust. I will say across the board, whether you have a will or a trust, a power of attorney is critical. and I've ranted about that recently. So listen to that episode. I'm not going to redo it now, but a power of attorney is a key piece, a key component that is often forgotten. And that should, anytime you're doing any kind of estate plan, whether it's a will or a trust-based estate plan, a power of attorney should be part of that package. And I wouldn't overlook that piece of the puzzle, because it's a really important piece of the puzzle. And while we as folks who are contemplating what am I supposed to do for my estate plan, it's easy to think about death. What is often overlooked is incapacity, particularly long-term incapacity. And with medical interventions and the way that the trend of what's happening in the world today, more folks are having longer and longer periods of incapacity. And that is a drain of resources unless you have, even if you have all your planning in place, that can be obviously very, very difficult. But having an estate plan in place well in advance to give you the tools to manage that is a huge, huge thing. So I didn't answer your question, but maybe I hope I answered some of the context around it of what we talked through. Does that make sense? Do you have questions about what I said?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, generally when a client comes to me with, you know, should I get a trust? Should I stick with a will? Should I do nothing? And I'm like, well, we can do estate plans under all of those methods for tax purposes, but that's just one of probably 10 issues to consider, or 20 issues. I don't know how many issues to consider. And that's where I refer them to you. And I guess my little trite saying, you kind of blew out of the water. I like to tell my clients, I say, well, if you want to do all the work and pay for your estate plan while you're alive, get a trust. If you want your kids to do all the work and pay for it, just stick with your will. But anyway,
right. Well,
I just joke with them.
It's not wrong, but I think that a lot of the work comes with being organized. And that's a big piece, that even if you have a very simple will, being organized in advance is one of the biggest gifts that you can give. And to be also honest about who you are, if you're not generally an organized person, the trust is unlikely to do its job. Right. That's just a reality. When I have very high net worth individuals who tend to be scattered in paperwork, but are brilliant, that's okay. Right. You don't have to be that extreme either, but just know on some level, know who you are and have that self-awareness of, gosh, if I have a trust, I'm not going to deal with the deeds. I go through property. I cycle through things. I don't like to keep track of that stuff. Then let's have a will to make sure you've got all your bases covered, and let's not make your life harder now than it has to be.
So what I'm hearing is the short answer, oftentimes that happens, it depends, right?
It depends. That's the lawyer answer. I was literally told first year of law school that is the only right answer at any given time. Right. It depends. And that's true, but frustrating.
It depends. Well, and really, in reality, and I know folks are going to get tired of me saying it, we have these conversations, we ask these questions, and what comes up to me, we talked about it a segment or two ago, there's a reason that you work with a tax professional, right? Because it's complicated. That's the other, I guess that could be the other right answer in law school, right? Is it depends, or it's complicated. The answer is complicated.
Right.
So, but it makes sense to work with somebody like you that's going to walk people through, here's the reasons to have a trust, here's the reasons to have a will, and then they'll decide which way works for them, right? So if that speaks to you, if you've been wondering that question, you know, Kevin just showed, we have questions that have, I don't want to say it's necessarily been keeping him up at night, but questions that we would answer that a lot of people also want to know, right? But if it's a question that has to do with, do I need a will or do I need a trust, and you're not satisfied with it, depends. Make sure you make a call. So give Taylor's office a call. Taylor, how do they call you?
503-878-8948 with Breakwater Law.
Perfect. Give Taylor's office a call, and she'll walk you through what she thinks might fit you best. And she'll probably tell you power of attorney, right?
That's, yeah. Yep. That you'll hear from me.
And Kevin, if they have questions about how, once they've, you know, worked through and Taylor's got them all set up, how's this going to affect us tax-wise, they can call you at
503-666-5569 and at baker-colson.com. And with us, it is no obligation. We like to have our listeners call in and can hear where you're at and help point you in the right direction if we're not the a good solution.
I think that, you know, I think that can be said for all the folks that we work with. We want to make sure that you, if you have questions, give us a call. We'll help drive you on the right, get you on the right path. And if that makes, if it means working with us, we'd love to help you out. And if it means not, we'd love to send you that way too. So call our office, 503-253-3000 for your complimentary consultation with Price Financial Group. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified after a short break.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. As we close out the show today, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in, even if it's only for a piece of our show. As a reminder, if you'd like a complimentary consultation with our team at our Clackamas, our Beaverton, our Tigard, or our Vancouver office, please give us a call, 503-253-3000. It's always complimentary. It'll only cost you a little bit of your time. And worst case scenario is you spent some time, had a free professional second opinion, and wouldn't it be worth it if maybe we found that one thing that could derail your retirement planning. So I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP. We've got Kevin Stege of Baker & Colson CPAs here with us, as well as Taylor Cattell of Breakwater Law. And pretty good show so far where we've covered some topics, but I know, Taylor, you had mentioned in the break that you had, you know, you noticed some things that are happening, you know, on the, you know, I don't want to call it the estate planning front necessarily, but more on the estate administration front and some things that you'd like to get off your chest maybe. So I'm going to, Kevin and I are going to step away and give you the floor here, because I know that it's something that, you know, folks will find interesting. So what is happening in, you know, in the world of estate planning? We should call it the state of estate planning. I might use that. I like that.
The EAU is a branch. It is a department within DHS. DHS, the Department of Human Services, is what most folks know. EAU is what you start to find out after someone's died.
Okay.
Okay, so the EAU says, where'd your money go? Because we paid for somebody during their lifetime, and the EAU is who goes after the estate to recover money when someone has died. So if you think about it from the policy standpoint, I'm not saying good or bad or indifferent. This is just how the policy, the thinking behind the policy is. Folks who are reliant on the state for benefits during their lifetime, the vast majority of them don't have enough money to pay for themselves, right? That's the whole idea for most of it. They're disabled and they can't work, or they just don't have enough means. And so they meet the threshold of qualifications to receive state assistance. Well, if somebody who has had state assistance gets money, well, that's not really fair, is it? If you just lock it in some kind of trust, or if you can you have your cake and eat it too? And so there's all sorts of laws that basically come together to say, no, you can't necessarily have your cake and eat it too. If it's your money, you, the person who received benefits, then it needs to be paid back. You need to pay back part of this. So there's a couple of different ways when it comes to how do you become eligible during your lifetime. That's not what I'm going to talk about today. That's a whole different conversation that isn't that that's much more complicated and dependent, in fact, and it depends and all that. But what happens when someone has done something to maintain their eligibility, but they do have money when they die? right? For, through some mechanism. That might be a supplemental needs trust. It might be an ABLE account. It might be inheritance from someone else, right? There's all sorts of ways. It might be a spouse has some money. How does the state get paid? So this is often a surprise because it doesn't come due until after both the person who received benefits and their spouse have died.
Okay.
So if mom had state assistance 20 years ago and then died, and then 10 years later dad dies, the EAU doesn't rear its letters until after dad dies, the most recent death. So there's this time gap sometimes in many cases, and all of a sudden the family's going, well, what do you mean there's a claim for this from however many years ago? And so the policy behind it is to recover when you can. And because there's so few people who do have money who have been on state assistance, the state is pretty aggressive. There's not a lot of compromise. There's not a lot of reason not to. And if you don't pay, there's some pretty hefty state levied interest. I believe it's at 9%. So you get hit hard if you don't pay up. And the estate, the EAU, I'm learning as I'm working through a very interesting case right now, has some pretty interesting tools at its disposal to get money, to get information from financial institutions that even trumps like what somebody had when they died, whether you want to disclose it or not.
Wow.
So there's some very big brother type stuff for those who get that reference, as far, and not to scare you, but just to say it's not something that you hide from. It's not something, it's something that, in my opinion, you face head on and you say, what's the amount of the claim and how are we going to pay it and to what extent? And the good news for those survivors who might look at the situation and say, the good news is it's not going to come from your money in the sense that it just has to come from the estate, right? So it's not going to come out of your personal pocket, but yes, it could very much reduce how much money you're going to get from the death of whoever's in your family. But then there's also some interesting strategies that come up as far as what assets do you use to pay and what can you get off the top for administrative expenses. And that all gets more nuanced and so forth. But the long and short of it that I am wanting to put out in the world is that there is this thing out there. The state does recover from those who have received some kind of state benefits. And I don't want surprises myself. I wouldn't want surprises for my clients. There is some information out there to try to figure out not just how, is there a state claim? Is there something we have to do about it? But also to anticipate, are there things during my lifetime that I might be able to do to preserve assets for my family? Are there things that I could do upon their death to try to minimize the stuff that's available and what's legal and what's not legal? And also with everything on the up and up, how would I still take care of the things that need to be taken care of with those estate assets and make sure that, say, I get reimbursed for the things that I paid personally before the rest of the money just goes away, right, back to the state? So there's a lot of strategy that can come up even in a situation with a very significant claim by the EAU. And it's not something to overlook or to avoid advice on, because one of those things that comes off the top before the EAU gets paid is attorney fees. So it's possible that you could get the advice you need to wrap up the things that you need without further reducing, you know, your own personal stake in it. Obviously, all that's fact dependent, but it's certainly something. Ask those questions. Know that that's out there, and that that is something that the state is going to go after aggressively. And on the flip side of that, if somebody in your life is disabled, either if they are an heir of yours, a close relative, or if you want to give them something during their lifetime, during your lifetime, upon your death, think about it and do it with an attorney. Don't just put them in there, because you could really disrupt their benefits, and all the money that you are trying to benefit them with could end up just going straight to the state. So that's not the, there are ways to avoid it going to the EAU. There are ways to make sure it goes to the person you care about. And then where you want it to go, as long as it's never their money. So have a plan. Don't give money to disabled people as a thoughtless, not thoughtless, as a well-intended gesture that could have unintended consequences. And talk to an attorney if you think that someone has received state assistance and you don't know how this whole process goes, because some foresight can really help reduce those surprises and save on some money.
Yeah, well, I mean, now not to end the show on just a major downer and scare people, right? But there is light at the end of the tunnel to get out of the state. If that's something that applies to you, and that's good stuff, and we're coming up on that hard out here, so that's good stuff. That's amazing. So give Taylor's office a call. They can call you at
Breakwater Law, 503-878-8948.
Perfect. Or visit breakwater-law.com, right?
You got it.
Beautiful. And Kevin, if they visit you at baker-colson.com or call you at 503, let's see, is it 666-5568? Woohoo, I got it. 5569. So 503-666-5569. And as always, you can reach me at Price Financial Group, 503-253-3000. Guys, I really appreciate having you on here. We'll do it again soon. We'll get some good questions that come in. Everybody that's listening, thank you for tuning in. Be safe out there. Be kind to each other. God bless you all. This has been Investing Simplified.
The opinions voiced in Investing Simplified with Bo Caldwell are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Investing Simplified.